Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Richard Rossi Live, and we're going to be talking about heaven. Many of you know my little brother died this year, and we probably, all of you listening at one time or another, have lost somebody. And so we wonder what heaven's like. And, you know, people will say that, no one's been to heaven and come back, although in the Christian faith we believe Jesus rose from the dead and told us that about eternal life. I was visiting my Aunt Margie in Florida in July, and she had this book called Waking Up in Heaven. It's written by Crystal McVeigh, and she's going to be with us in just a moment, talking about how her heart stopped. And she could tell a story about an experience of heaven. And you can send in your questions to Richard Rossi Live about God, about heaven, about her experience. RichardRossiLive@gmail.com. There's also a phone number. You can call in questions on the screen. And we'll be right back to talk about heaven. Richard Rossi Live, and hopefully we got Crystal live on the line. Can you hear me, Crystal?
I can. Hello.
Oh, great. Welcome, Crystal, and welcome to the show. I'm so glad my aunt told me about your book in Florida there, and she and Uncle Don evacuated after that, but they're now safely back home. But I visited them prior to this big hurricane, and she was telling me about your book. I told my mom about it. My mom's reading the book. And it's really been a great timing for us because of, of a loss in our family with my brother passing away.
Oh, so sorry.
I imagine you've heard that quite a bit, that your book has comforted people that have lost someone, huh?
I do, and I think that has been just the greatest payoff that we could have gotten, you know, just to know that it's comforted people or walked with them in that moment. You know, I used to be so afraid of death. And to be able to just give you a glimpse of what your loved one experienced is just a gift from God.
Well, now you were, this wasn't supposed to be a big, and by the way, those of you listening, the book is Waking Up in Heaven, Crystal McVeigh, and she's wrote a sequel, Chasing Heaven. These books are New York Times bestsellers and available everywhere. Do you have a place that you direct people to get it, a website or anything, or just go on Amazon or to the bookstore, Crystal?
Sure. Well, I'm a bargain girl, so I always say grab it where you find it the cheapest. But I do have a website. It's crystalmcveigh.com. Mm-hmm. But they're available wherever books are sold.
Well, you were going in for what seemed to be not a life-or-death procedure, right? And then something went awry,
right,
and your heart stopped. Could you tell us what happened?
Sure. I went in for a routine procedure. It was supposed to be the same day. When the doctor went in to do the procedure, he nicked my pancreas. So I woke up with pancreatitis, and they put me in the hospital for a few days. It was supposed to be routine, just on a pain pump for a few days. And 2 days in, so I went in on December 8th, and so 2 days in, I woke up that morning. I didn't feel well, and I went into respiratory arrest. They called a code blue, and I was gone.
Mm. You mentioned a moment ago, prior to this, you had a fear of death. What were you afraid of? Hell? Were you afraid that we just ceased to exist? Were you afraid of the pain of death? What do you think your fears were about prior to this?
I definitely think all three of those.
Uh-huh.
You know, I was raised in church, you know, before I go into the moment that I died. the whole reason I had to write the book is because it, all of the moments that led up to that, you know, were just as important in the story. I was raised in church my whole life. I sat in church every Sunday morning, and I can remember at 8 years old hearing about Jesus and if I would be baptized, that he would save me. And what people didn't know is that I desperately needed to be saved. My parents had divorced when I was very young. My stepfather was addicted to drugs. He was extremely abusive. And I had been molested from the age of 3. So at 8 years old, when I jumped into that water, I came up truly believing that this Jesus was going to save me. The abuse continued until I was 12. And at that point, by my 12th birthday, I'd been baptized 4 times in 3 different denominations. And after that 4th time, I just assumed that I was not worth saving, that there was something so incredibly broken within me and about me that even Jesus didn't want me. And that's how I lived into my teens. I was very, very rascal of a teen. I was always in trouble. My mom at this time was a single mom again. And I was just a fighter. And by the time I was 21, I had been divorced. I had 2 children and had had an abortion as a teenager that I had never spoke about. And it was in that moment at 19 years old when I walked out of that abortion clinic that I remember thinking, if God is real, he would never love me now. Like, there was just no chance. I had finally done the unthinkable. And that's really how I lived through my 20s. I continued to go to church. I just wasn't sure that this God that loved you was going to love me. So death was very scary for me because I wasn't sure what I would see.
Mm. Now, you were 9 minutes, if I remember right. Your heart had stopped, and you have a very vivid description of everything and them trying to revive you, which I imagine you had to get that part from talking to your mom and the medical people to know their efforts on the other side at that point, right?
Yes, sir, a little bit. At that point, that morning, you know, I was 32 years old. I had been married for 5 years to a wonderful Christian man, the first Christian man that I'd ever dated in my entire life. And during that 5 years, my faith began to grow. I shared my secrets with him, my doubts. And, you know, he just had no doubt that there was a God, that he loved me. But that morning when I woke up in that hospital, I was still wrapped in doubt of God. And our babies, we had just had twins. They were 10 months old. And we had just spent the very beginning of that year in the NICU with them for almost 4 months. And my relationship with God was very strained as it has always been my whole life. I had a lot of questions for him. Watching my twins grow and develop and suffer and fight, you know, there was a lot of conversations between God and I. And what it really came down to was I wanted to know why. I wanted to know why he was the kind of God that he was, why he didn't love me, why he didn't save me. And so that's who I was that morning when I woke up. I remember waking up that morning just so sick to my stomach and just vomiting, and the pain that was radiating through my body was incredible. And my mom had come up to stay the day with me. I remember her cleaning me. I remember her putting lotion on my hands and my feet. And then I remember dozing off. And I don't know exactly what time it was, probably around 1 or so. I opened my eyes and I saw my mom sitting at the foot of my bed in a chair. Her back was towards me, and instantly, I don't know how else to describe it, but to say in that moment, this peace wrapped itself around me, and I knew that I was leaving. I don't know how else to explain it. It was instantaneous, and I, with the very last bit of breath I had, I pushed out the words, "I love you," and I don't know what she said after I said that, because the minute I said, "I love you," I closed my eyes and immediately opened them and I was standing at the entrance of heaven.
Wow. And describe what happened, what you saw, what the experience was like. And by the way,
sure.
All of you listening can read this, of course, in greater detail in Waking Up in Heaven, her book that's available everywhere. And what was heaven like?
Well, so the very first thing that I have to say is that in this experience, I knew exactly where I was. And that was the very first thing I remembered knowing, was that I knew where I was, that there was no question. I knew that I was dying. I knew that I had died, that I had left my physical body. And immediately I was greeted by two angels that were standing in front of me. They had human-like shapes, very human-like. And the one to the left was slightly taller than the one to the right. And I can remember there was so much light coming off of them, almost as if when you look at a light bulb, you can see the silhouette of the light bulb, but you can't see inside of it. That's how they were. But it didn't hurt my eyes, you know, to look at them. I knew that I was still me, that I was still the same me that had just died in that hospital room. But I knew that I was the same me from the moment he had created me, the most perfect version of myself.
You know,
I love
this line in your book, Crystal, that says the first person we meet in heaven is ourselves. Wow.
Yes, because I mean, and that's exactly the first realization that I came to, was who I was before, you know, I became this human Crystal. And I've had several people say, you know, that's not biblical. And I had never read the Bible, and so that bothered me.
What are they saying is not biblical, Crystal?
That I had said that I existed before I came here.
Oh, that your
and
spirit
so,
pre-existed before
right.
birth? Okay.
Yes. And so I was so conflicted with that, and I read the Bible, and there in his word he says, for I knew you before I knitted you into your mother's womb.
Interesting. That's true. I think in Jeremiah 1 and Psalm 139
yep,
said that. Which one are you referring to? Do you remember the reference point?
I believe it was Jeremiah. I don't quote me on that, but I just remember reading that. And
I knew you before. Wow, that's interesting.
And what I tell people is, you know, I was connected to the part of me that has existed the moment he created me.
I just found it, Jeremiah 1:5. This is probably it. Before I formed you in the womb, I knew you.
Mm-hmm.
Before you were born, I set you apart. Interesting.
And that was the me that I was standing in. That me. Mm-hmm. Not the human Crystal, the spirit. I could talk
well, you know,
to the
Crystal,
angel.
Something that comes to mind right now is I've heard it said a person with an experience is not at the mercy of a person with a theology, because, you know, the Bible, I guess all the books were collected around 400 AD and put into this kind of library of 66 books or whatever. Ever since then, we have like 28,000 denominations, and they all want to argue about this is scriptural and that's scriptural and this is not scriptural.
Right.
And they, you know, but you've had an experience. And that's a whole
right.
different thing. It's like, okay, like I'm getting to talk to you and know you. And so when I read your book, having conversed with you and knowing the kind of person you are, you're a lovely wife and mother and teacher of third graders in Oklahoma, and I know you as a person, I'm going to have a whole different take on your book knowing
right.
you. And I'm sure your husband really has a whole different take because he knows you so well and so intimately.
Right.
And so you have this experience. And then someone comes along that's, you know, well, it says here in this verse, or blah, blah, blah. And you're like, yeah, but I was
yeah.
in heaven.
It was heartbreaking. And it there were heartbreaking moments. I never thought I would have to defend my story. But, you know, God very clearly told me, and I talk about in my second book, Chasing Heaven, about stepping out and telling our story. You know, he said, I never told you to make people believe. I only told you to tell. I can remember standing in that moment with the two angels. I knew them. I had not known them on this earth. I knew that they belonged to me. I knew that they had been with me always. I loved them. I was so excited to see them again. And immediately I began to converse with them, but without words. It was all done through thought and emotion. It was the most profound form of communication that I had ever experienced.
So would you say it was kind of telepathic, like you knew
very
what
much,
Jesus
yes,
or angels were
so.
Thinking, or they knew your question and answered it without having to verbalize a language? Or?
Right. There was no language that I can remember. I just know that we communicated instantaneous. I did not have to search for words there. It was just an instantaneous communication. I call my angels Maria and Francisco, and I have no idea why I do that. But
Maria and Francisco?
I know. I always joke and say I'm going to get to heaven, and they're going to say, yeah, no, not even close. But I know that they belonged just to me. Mm. And as I was talking to them, the other realization was that there was no time in this place. There, like, time did not exist.
That's a really good point, because your book talks about the 9 minutes, but that's only on the earth standpoint.
Yeah,
but in heaven, there's no time. So, there's another book about heaven that talks about a guy, and he says so many minutes in heaven, and I kind of chuckle because in heaven, that's just measuring time by, I think, the sun and the planets and all that. But in heaven, it didn't feel like 9 minutes. It probably felt, I don't know if longer is the word, but.
It was. I mean, I could not have experienced in 9 minutes on earth what I experienced there. So I became aware of the realization, you know, there was no time. I wasn't rushed. I could have sat there and talked to these angels forever. And as we were conversing, I became aware of another presence that was in this tunnel. And that's what I describe this place as this, the most beautiful tunnel of light that I could ever describe. And I call it a tunnel only because it was all around me. It was above me and below me and to my sides, but yet it went on for eternity. Like there was no end to my sides, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I do remember becoming aware of another presence. And I knew exactly what was happening. And as I turned to my right, to face the presence of God, that I knew that's who it was. And I turned and I saw the most beautiful profusion of love. If you could tangibly see love, that's what he is.
Mm.
And I fell to my knees in front of him. And then I went straight to my face and I raised my hands. And I called out, why? And, you know, I'm reminded of all the times that I called out why to him as a human. And all the questions that I had that I wanted to ask him. Where were you? How could you let that happen to a 3-year-old? Why didn't you love me? I called out, why didn't I do more for you?
Now, you mentioned
that
in your book that you were abused sexually as a child, I believe, and over a period of time. And for those of us that have suffered abuse as kids, that is a question, why? And unfortunately, some people even blame you if you're abused in some way, and so you can have this shame or you blame yourself. Do you have any sense, I know it's almost an unanswerable thing, but did you have any sense of why these bad things happen, or why if God is omnipotent and has all power, he's allowed some of us to go through things like that?
Well, and that was the beauty of this experience. So in that moment, as I fell in front of him and I called out, why didn't I do more for you? Which is, in my mind, the biggest thing that I take away from that moment. Because I didn't just meet God. My spirit recognized him, and I recognized him and was so full of awe and love for him. And he wrapped himself around me as I laid there on my face crying in front of him. And I was not crying out of shame. It reminds me of the story in the Bible where Jesus is reclining in the Pharisee's house, and the woman walks in and falls at his feet crying. Mm-hmm. And Jesus touches her, and the Pharisee says, if he only knew who he was touching. And the beauty is that the woman cried because she knew that he knew who she was, and yet mm-hmm. he was touching her anyway. That's exactly what God did for me in that moment. And
it
so,
seems like you understood God as love through this experience. And
oh, very
and,
much.
And that
and not,
comes through really clear, because we have almost like these two different gods in the church presents. And like the
oh, yes,
hurricane
here.
That our friends went through recently, I heard some preachers, and it, to me it's horrific, but they were telling people in Florida and Texas, oh, God's mad at you and punishing all the Floridians
no.
and Texans. And you know, they will say things like, well, God has love as a characteristic, but he also has judgment and anger and all this. But it says God is love, and everything he does
no,
is from love.
Was.
And you as a mother,
yes.
you know, you might have to take something bad away from your kids or take a splinter out of their finger or whatever, but everything is coming
right.
from love when we're a loving parent. And it
yes.
seems like that took away a lot of the shame for you after you realized that
very
God doesn't
much.
Just have love. He is God is love.
Yep, he is love. And as I laid there and I bathed in this love from him, and the entire time he and I communicating, I can remember looking down to the tunnel, and I saw the entrance to heaven, which I call it the gates. I didn't actually see large gates.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing to take to keep in mind is that the colors that I was experiencing in this place, when I say I saw this beautiful white light, white is the closest color we have here, but it pales
mm-hmm.
in comparison to what I was actually experiencing.
That sounds beautiful.
And as I
Crystal.
Looked, it was the most beautiful thing I've ever experienced. And as I noticed the gates, the entrance to heaven, God said, once we get there, you can't come back. And he reminded me of, or he showed me actually my children, my four kids.
Mm-hmm.
And he told me that the plan for their life was perfect, just like all of the plans that he has for our lives. His perfection is so different from ours. And his perfection did not mean that they weren't going to have trials or tribulations or suffering or heartache. But what he showed me was that he will use it all for good and for his glory, and that he would never leave them. I knew that I was going to get to be a part of their life. And this is what I feel like I want to tell you personally right now with the loss of your brother, is that I knew I was not leaving my children. I knew that I was going to be in every aspect of their lives, that I wasn't going to miss one moment. And the most important part was that I knew that I was going to see them again. And
that's
so
that's
he
so
told
beautiful.
Me, well, and I think that we forget, because we can't see our loved ones any longer with our human eyes.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that I was still going to get to be in my children's lives.
Yeah, that reunion is so comforting. When my brother was a great rock and roll guitarist, and there were just 1,000 people lined up for like 4 hours to extend their sympathies at the funeral home that loved his music
mm-hmm.
and everything. And but one of the most comforting things my uncle Art actually said to me was, he's with your dad now. He's with Nana, which was our grandmother, an Italian mm-hmm. Nana is like grandma. But when he told me that, you know, he's with the other family members, that's a very comforting thought. Now, although some that have had these near-death experiences talk about seeing relatives, but in your case,
yes.
you saw the angels, not the relatives
I
initially,
did.
Right?
I got to meet one person as God showed me my children, and he gave me the choice. He said, you know, you can go back and be their mom, or you can continue. And he very clearly had told me that if I continued, if I crossed over that through that entrance, that I would not be able to change my mind and come back. And I chose him. I had never chosen him above anything in my entire life. In that moment, I chose him. And as we continued to go towards the gates, my angels and God, I saw her, this little girl. She was completely human. She had on the most beautiful little dress with yellow flowers and a little bonnet on her head, and she had a white basket. And she would dip her little basket into the light, and she would pour it out almost as if the light was water. It would just cascade all around her. And she would throw her head back, and she would laugh. And I remember looking at her, and I remember knowing that she was mine. And I wanted to run to her, and I wanted to scoop her up, and I wanted to wrap her in my arms and tell her how much I loved her, that I would never let anything hurt her, that I was so sorry for any kind of, any kind of pain that she may have experienced. But more importantly, that I just loved her. And as I watched her, my spirit began to swell like a balloon with love and pride, so much so that I remember saying, I'm going to explode. I'm going to cease to exist because I could not contain the love I found for this child, even in my spiritual form. And in that moment, it's as if I had on glasses of some sort, you know, like God removed them from me. And when I looked back down at her, I recognized her as me, as the 3-year-old me. And God let me know that is what he had been trying to tell me my whole life, that he had never left me, that he had never abandoned me, that he loved me more than I could ever even understand. In that moment, I say, if his love is every grain of sand in this world, he gave me one grain. He allowed me to see myself through his eyes with one grain of his love, and my spirit could not contain just one grain of his love. And in that moment, he freed me from a lifetime of lies, because I believed that he had abandoned me and I believed that he didn't love me. And he freed me with the truth, which is that I always belonged to him and that he loved me more than I could ever comprehend.
That's so
but
beautiful.
He gave humanity the gift of free will. You asked me earlier, why would this loving God allow these things to happen? Because I wasn't hurt at the hands of God. I was hurt at the hands of human.
Mm-hmm.
But that did not mean that he wasn't there with me. He experienced it with me.
And now with experiencing his love, you've transformed in your... I really like you... I mean, I've heard others that have been clinically dead and talked about near-death experiences. And one of the differences with you that I really like is I like you as a person, as a grounded person. You're a mother, you're a teacher, you're very grounded, and you're living a normal life, you know, teaching kids every day. And it just resonates with me. And I love also on page 12 of your book, you say, I was still me, and you talk about, you know, seeing yourself and seeing you as a person, as an entity through the loving eyes of God. One of the reasons I like that idea, some of the extreme Eastern religion teachers, like there's a guy, Ram Dass, and he teaches that we lose the me. We all kind of blend into God, and there's no individuation. There's just all, we lose any sense of personhood, whereas... You know, you see in heaven, you met yourself. You met yourself, and you saw yourself, and that we are unique personalities and loved by God. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was really a precious message.
Breathed into existence by him. Mm-hmm. And I had just felt so unimportant my entire life and so minuscule. And none of us are. We were all hand created, you know, by the creator of the universe. I mean, Richard, he did not believe that his plan would be perfect until he created you, you know, until he created me, the homeless man on the street. You know, we are all created by this God that we keep in a box, but yet he breathed into an existence, this universe. I mean, it's just what he did for me in that moment was that he freed me from shame and from guilt. And the biggest one was from secret. And then we continued to go towards the gate. And then I heard my mom cry. And I knew what was happening, and I stopped and I looked at him. And a lot of people will say, you know, you don't talk about Jesus enough. And then a lot of people will say, you talk about Jesus too much.
You can't please everyone.
Or you didn't see Jesus. No, you can't. And, you know, and I have a lot of people that will say, you didn't see Jesus. But I saw God. I saw the one true God. And then I was raised to believe in Christ. And I do believe that was the presence that I was also in. My husband will explain that the Trinity is an egg. You know, you hold one egg in your hand, but it's made of three separate parts, the shell, the yolk, and the white. But yet it's still one distinct egg.
Interesting. I never heard
egg.
That. That's, tell your husband that's a very clever
I know. I
clever
never
way
understood the
it.
Trinity. And so I go back and forth between using the name God and using the name Jesus because, you know, that is my belief. But what I did find in that experience was that God is so much bigger than any religion on this earth gives him credit for. He is so much bigger and more wondrous and kind and loving. Mm. And he never stops pursuing us. Never.
I love that. It's really theologically what I believe, and it's helped heal me as well to believe that he's love. We have people sending in email questions. You can send them to richardrossilive@gmail.com or call the number on your screen, 347-637-2379. Are you able to hang on a little bit more for some questions, Crystal? Great. We'll be right back with you, Crystal, and with all the rest of you so that I can go look at a bunch of these questions. And we'll just be back in, I don't know, probably about 30, 40 seconds with Crystal. We'll be right back at Richard Rossi Live to talk more about heaven. Crystal McVeigh, clinically dead for 9 minutes, sharing her experience in heaven. Someone asks about medical science debates. Some neurologists say the brain can create these. Dave Johnson sending this in Cincinnati. The brain can create hallucinations or comforting neurological experiences. I'll weigh in and then let Crystal comment on this. I researched some of the data on all of this. About 3% of the U.S. population, has, according to Scientific American, has had a near-death experience. And there are doctors that say that this is real and that a lot of times there's you know, flatlining. No, like a Harvard neurosurgeon, I think his name is Elian Alexander, had a near-death experience and said that he went over his medical records and he was, in fact, clinically dead and he experienced heaven. There's another doctor, Michael Saban, a cardiologist, who's wrote a bunch of studies on it, Recollections of Death. So there are people in the medical community on both sides. Have you ran into this, Crystal, where people say it could have been all the drugs you were on or it could have been a hallucination? Obviously, God told you just to share your story. You're not here to convert or convince anyone. But what's your thoughts on that?
Yes, that's been one of the biggest questions or statements that I've heard. I do think that if you look at the experiences of Eben Alexander, who was the neurosurgeon who did not believe that people like myself were having these experiences until he had one. Part of his brain that would have made him have that quote-unquote hallucination was actually dead. What was her last name? Neil. She was a doctor who drowned in a kayaking accident. Don Piper was a pastor. You have accounts of children, and then you have an account of a mother in Oklahoma. None of us had ever spoken to each other before, yet we experienced so much of the exact same situation. I don't know that our brains could sync and do that together. Also, I said on one talk show I was on, and we were talking, I said, you know, the thing that you have to remember is that I never even thought that this is what I would see. Mm-hmm. I did not grow up believing that God was a loving God. And here's the other thing. If medical science had not brought me back, then everybody would have said, well, we know she's in a better place. We know that she's, you know, she's with God. So why is it so hard to believe that when my heart quit functioning and my body quit breathing, that that's exactly where I was?
Wow, powerful. Powerful, powerful. Here's a question from Anita in Maryland. Any thought on near-death experiences in different religions? She said, I don't have evidence of this, but I've heard that sometimes people in other religions see other God figures. A Hindu might see a deity from Hinduism. A Christian might see Jesus. It seems like your experience, you experienced the love of God. You felt mm-hmm. the presence of Jesus. And it is interesting to me, and I think it actually supports what you said about God's unconditional love being wide, his mercy and love being wider and bigger than any narrow denomination, in the sense that you felt it was so great, because some of the like real fundamentalist Christians will say that, hey, something's off here, because some of these people that aren't Christian or they're atheists or whatever, they still experience that light and that loving presence of God. But to me, that's not a bad thing. It's just showing that God's love is so much greater than the fundamentalists mm-hmm. that think, you know, only 1% of humanity will experience the love of God, you know. But what's your take? Have you heard that, the different religions, people from different
very
backgrounds?
Very much. Yes, very much so. And, you know, when God sent me back from heaven, you know, I heard my mom cry. I said, can I tell her I'm okay? He said, the choice is up to you. And when I turned around to go and find where her voice was coming from, he said, tell them what you can remember. So unfortunately, in that moment that I was with him, I had all answers. I knew everything. But unfortunately, I'm human again, and I don't remember all of the answers to these questions. What I will tell you is that I very much believe that Christ was who he said he was. But here's the thing, too, is, you know, I've told my husband, I said, if somebody paid off my house, and I didn't believe that they had done it, it would not make my house any less paid off.
Yeah.
I absolutely
Excellent
believe
point.
That Christ died for us, and that he was the gift that God sent to humanity to
yeah.
usher us all back into that presence. So whether
Excellent
whether
point.
We believe that he did it or not doesn't negate, you know, if it was true, which is what I believe. But
yeah,
I believe
there's
that
a New Age guru, Doreen Virtue, that talks about angels and all that, and she recently has really got into Jesus. And, you know, and she's kind of made the same point that, you know, she said, I had a little bit of kickback from Jesus because a lot of my Eastern religion followers or New Age followers had had experiences with these really judgmental Christian people, you know, legalistic type of Christians. And she said, but, you know, as I got deeper and deeper into my spiritual search, I saw that, oh, my God, Jesus is the one that all this power is flowing through. And I love your point about the house. It makes me remember how Elvis, we've had several guests that were close with Elvis, and he would just sometimes pay off people's mortgages or buy them cars, and sometimes they would find out Elvis did it, and other times, like, there'd be some poor lady looking at a Cadillac at a car, and he would just hey honey, buy that woman that Cadillac, and they never found out he did it. But like you said, some of us know the gifts that come through Jesus, and others are getting the gifts and the love from Jesus and don't even know it's Jesus.
And that was one of the biggest things that I struggled with too, was, you know, if this God loves us so much, you know, so if we make the wrong choice here, he condemns us to a hell. And I'm not a theologian, and I didn't come back with knowledge of all of the answers that we talked about. And so what I have to go back to is what I do remember, which is that he is the most loving creature, creation, that we could ever imagine. And, I mean, we don't even understand what love is until we're in his presence.
Well, this question is kind of funny. You talk about not being a theologian, and we earlier alluded to the people that, you know, the Bible bangers that will try to critique everything you're saying with the Bible. And this question kind of feels like that a little bit. Forgive me, Frank.
No problem.
Deacon Frank is in a biblical objection that said Paul and Corinthians went to heaven, and he said it was so great that you're so humbled he could not talk about it. Wouldn't it be right to talk about? And he said a lot of the people out there he's heard, they sound like they're kind of out there and make these claims that Paul wasn't even willing to make. I want to address that, then I'll let Crystal. I know there are, forgive me for saying, some real crackpots out there. There's a woman that a lot of the Pentecostal ladies out here in California follow. I won't mention her name and be kind and not mention her name. But this woman claims that every week on Friday she goes to heaven, rides roller coasters in an amusement park in heaven, and goes to movies with Jesus, and, you know, just saw Star Wars up there at this heavenly multiplex. And she has all these hundreds and hundreds of middle-aged women following her like a guru. And, you know, she really seems out there to me. But I just want to say on Crystal's behalf, you know, this is a very grounded person, you know, a married woman with four kids who teaches third grade in Oklahoma, and she was, her heart stopped for 9 minutes, and she had this experience, and she's not sharing this in some sort of braggadocious way to become a guru. She's just sharing her experience. But have you run into this one from fundamentalists that Paul went to heaven and said he wouldn't even talk about it, it was so sacred,
Yes.
And that, you know, you shouldn't cavalierly be writing and talking about this. I imagine you've run into that, especially in the Bible Belt, right?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Constantly. And also when the Bible mentions, you know, that no one has seen, you know, heaven and returns. I call the place that I was in heaven. But if you'll recall, you know, I said that I could actually see the entrance into heaven, and that God had said, you know, once we get there, you can't come back. So I absolutely believe what the Bible said, that I could not have crossed into heaven and come back. However, I don't know what to call this realm. Catholics would call it purgatory. If that's what you believe, purgatory is absolutely beautiful. I was in the presence of God. I was with the creator of the universe. And so the only word I had to call it was heaven. Mm-hmm. Human words will always fail to be able to explain what this realm looked like, what I experienced. Then I just tell people, I can't make you believe what I'm saying any more than you can make me believe that it never happened.
Hmm. You mentioned before the experience, and we're running out of time, unfortunately. It's gone by so quick. But you mentioned that you had a lot of doubts, you had a lot of skepticism. What would you say to our, as we listen to our doubts, to our skepticism, to our fears of death?
I would say take a deep breath in, and that's your proof right there that you were created. When we look at the human body, when we look at the way our universe and our world works, you know, there is a creator of all of this, and he loves us. Death, there is no sting in death. There is no fear. And that is the other thing that all of us that have come back with stories we talk about. Mary, like I said, she drowned, Mary Neal, and Don Piper was hit by a truck. I died in a hospital. But there was no fear. God comes for us immediately. And not only did he come for me, he was escorting me into his kingdom himself. I mean, there's just nothing to fear.
Wow. Perfect love casts out fear, the Bible says. Someone's saying, please squeak in my question. Please squeak in my question. Okay, this is Brenda in Phoenix. She says, in your book, you saw yourself as a little girl wearing a certain outfit. And she said she knows someone that saw a ghost of their mother and had a certain dress that was a favorite dress. And she says, why would we have earthly clothes in the spiritual realm of heaven or in these ghost
sure.
appearances? Why we wear clothes? That's kind of kind of one of those how many angels dance on the head of a pin questions. We're really getting into esoteric things here. But
I
what a last question. But do you have any thoughts on that?
Yes. I do. And the dress that I was seen in, and I believe that God is a God of confirmation.
Mm-hmm.
So when I was going, when I came back and I was describing to my mom this, what God had done for me. Now it had, it took me a while to really come out and explain the trauma of my childhood. And when I, but I, when I described the little girl and I described the dress and the outfit and this bonnet and this basket, my mother started to cry. And she went and she dug through piles and piles of photos until she pulled out the photo that's in the back of my book of the 3-year-old me in that dress. I believe that that was God's way of confirming this was not in your head.
Interesting.
This was me. I mean, he's a God of confirmation. And
wow,
I didn't see a ghost.
I'm so glad we answered that because that makes sense. You know, Crystal, my aunt who told me about your book, and by the way, this link will be good in perpetuity for replay. We've gone over time, so
perfect.
In some areas we're no longer being heard live because we just went over the allotted time. However, when people replay the link, this longer thing we're talking about, they'll all hear it on the replays. But my aunt, Margie, who told me about your book, her daughter, my cousin Linda, who I just love so much, she was so much fun, she died in a car wreck in her 20s. And my mom was near death in the hospital. And my mom, in the middle of this heart operation, saw my cousin Linda by her bed, and
mm-hmm.
and she said, "Aunt Dorothy, it's not your time yet. I'm in heaven, and I've come to completion."
Yeah.
And and you will one day come to completion as well. And she told her sister, my Aunt Margie, who told me about your book, that she saw Linda, and she described this dress that she was wearing, this blue dress, and my Aunt Margie said, "Oh my God!" And she just was obsessed with that blue and that blue dress. Before she died, we went out looking at all the stores. She wanted to get this certain blue dress for this formal dance that she was going to on a date. It was like a prom type of thing. And so, you know, it wasn't so much that, oh, in heaven they're wearing these earthly clothes. I never connected the dots to what you just said. That blue dress confirmed to my Aunt Margie.
Right.
The validity of that experience.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, we take on our most perfect spiritual form. You know, I was in a spiritual form, you know. Now I'm, and I actually feel confined. The moment I opened my eyes back in that hospital room, I knew everything that was happening. I knew what everything what, that was happening. But I couldn't remember how to talk because I had just come back into a human form and words were hard to form. And the very first thing I said was, "Stop." You know, I wanted them to stop trying to bring me back. And I said, "I'm with God. I'm in heaven. I'm okay." And I would try to go back, you know, and they kept working on me. But, you know, he does things to confirm his presence with us. And why wouldn't we see, you know, our loved ones in a way that we would recognize them.
Wow. It has been such a joy to talk to you, Crystal. I feel like the heavenly thing where there's no time and it just went by. Oh, my God.
Please,
you know,
tell Margie I said thank you.
Oh, I sure will. And she is so happy you're on the show. This book has meant so much to us because, like I say, my brother died, the youngest brother, and her daughter, as I said, died at a very young age.
Sorry.
In fact, when I was visiting her before the hurricane in Florida, she was showing me some of Linda's things, her daughter that died.
And that breaks my heart.
All of us. Yeah, it was so sad for all of us. Yeah. But this is very encouraging to know your experience, you know, validates what Christ said, "I am the resurrection and the life.
Mm-hmm.
Whoever liveth and believeth in me." What was that?
I said, I just want Margie to know that her daughter did not suffer. And that is the one thing that I know beyond any shadow of a doubt is that there is, he comes for us immediately. You know, when my mom was in that hospital room, and she'll remember reading this part, My mom describes her experience as hell. She watched my body convulse and die. But I was gone from the moment I said, I love you. He took me. And so she watched my physical body die, but I was gone. And I think that's very important. But it doesn't stop Margie's hurt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she longs for her child. But I don't think that there's any greater hurt that you could experience than the loss of a child. And so I can't wait to be standing there with her as she introduces me to her daughter. And, you know, that's what I hold on to, Richard, is that we have an eternity ahead of us.
Well, that's beautiful. And I love your book, and I want all of you to read it that are listening. Waking Up in Heaven and Chasing Heaven, your sequel, talks about how this affected your life, your viewpoints in a myriad of ways, right?
Yes, that's another conversation we'd have to have.
Yeah, well, I'd love to have you back on sometime about that book.
I'd love that. I'd love to do that. You come back totally changed,
yeah.
And then the next adventure became, what now?
I'm sorry for all the hurt you went through growing up. We have kind of parallel backgrounds in terms of, you know, hurtful childhoods in many ways.
Well, I'm sorry for yours.
But we've come through it, and God's love is
That's right. Is
the answer for us, the unconditional
love of God.
And
I wouldn't change any of it. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, it's
now,
like we regret it, but
what
we don't
done
regret
with
it. Yeah.
But it made me who I was. It made me who I am. And, you know, when I look into my classroom and I look in the eyes of these kids, you know, I'm reminded that we don't all have this beautiful cookie cutter childhood, and it's just made me a more compassionate person.
Yeah, I don't feel any judgment like a lot of religious people have from you at all, which is to me indicative of your experience with the living God who is love. And when I got involved in the recovery movement, and there's this thing they say in these 12-step recovery groups, which is as we heal, we come to a point where we don't regret the past nor wish to close the door on it. And every time they would say that in these groups, I would just be like, BS, you know. I don't like the past. I don't like the bad stuff in the past, and I wish I could change it. I regret the past. But then as you realize how we grow spiritually and we come to a place of greater spiritual growth and understanding,
mm-hmm.
and that all those things were a part of making us who we are today, and we want to have the insights and the friends and the, you know, pressing forward spiritually to grow and figure things out, had we not been to hell and back, you know?
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, and remember what he showed me in that moment, that he showed me my children, that his plan is perfect. And in doing so, it's not that he will ever take over our free will that he gave us. Why would he give us free will also and then use it at his discretion? Then we no longer have free will and we're puppets. And that's not what he created us to be. But what he did show me was that he takes all things that are done and he will use them for good. And we will probably never know how such horrible, horrible things can be used for good until we stand back in his presence and his whole plan is unfolded in front of us and we see.
Wow. And even though we're over time, a comment coming in here in closing, Mary Lake, New Smyrna, Florida, listening to this conversation about the bad things, there are gifts found in these painful experiences. God allows these bad things to happen. It's part of a larger loving opportunity to heal, grow, and transform. Without turmoil,
turmoil,
we cannot get stirred up inside to change. Without turmoil, we remain stagnant with no opportunities to grow.
Absolutely.
Wow. This has been such a good spiritual experience.
I agree. We have to do it again. We have so much more to talk about.
Well, blessings to you and hubby and your four kids and all those third graders that you're teaching there in Oklahoma.
Well, please tell Margie I said thank you, and I look forward to our next conversation, Richard.
I do, Crystal. I feel like we could do a bunch of shows. It's been so wonderful. God bless you, Crystal, and have a wonderful weekend the rest of your time.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, and thank you, everybody, for listening. Wow. It's good to know, isn't it? The Bible says to be absent from the body is to be present with the Lord. And here's Bob Dylan, Unplugged, knocking on heaven's door for you, a second of it.
Knocking on heaven's door, just like so many times before.